From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, predictions for all of us. Happy birthday, by the way, to Steve of Maine, from your dear friends Lois and Bill. Everybody's an avid Coast to Coast listener out there. Have a great one, Stephen. Here's what's happening. A story that has gripped the nation in Massachusetts. The man accused of killing two-year-old Bella Bond, little girl, known as Baby Doe, after her decomposing body was found wrapped in a blanket near Boston Harbor in June, was apparently obsessed with demons and exorcisms, and dismissed his brutal handwork by saying it was her time to die. This according to prosecutors. The chilling details related to the girl's murder were revealed during the arraignments of Rachel Bond, Bella's mother, and Michael McCarthy, Bond's live-in boyfriend. McCarthy, who has been ordered held without bail, is charged with murder. He's 35 years old. He was mostly emotionless as he looked straight on in the court. The mother, being held on a million-dollar bail, charged as an accessory after the fact, wore a hooded sweatshirt and cried several times during the proceedings. This is what McCarthy apparently said. She was a demon anyway. It was time for her to go. Unbelievable story. A former peanut company executive has been given a 28-year sentence for his role in a national salmonella outbreak linked to 9 deaths. Stuart Parnell, a 61-year-old, the ex-owner of the Peanut Corporation of America, was convicted last year of knowingly shipping tainted products. His brother Michael, who worked as a food broker, was given 20 years. The outbreak made hundreds of people ill, prompted one of the largest food recalls in U.S. history. The head of a pharmaceutical company has defended his company's decision to raise the price of a 62-year-old medication used by AIDS patients by over, get this, 5,000% increase. Are you kidding me? The CEO said the company will use the extra money to make that it makes from sales to research new treatments. The drug is used to treat toxoplasmosis, a parasitic affliction that affects people with compromised immune systems. Jeez. Well, can you build a better brain with blueberries or with fish, walnuts, kale? The idea that certain superfoods can keep us sharper as we age has huge appeal, especially as study after study is suggesting that brain power will not be found just in a supplement pill. As a matter of fact, what they are saying now, that if you eat things like blueberries, fish, walnuts, and kale, you might have a better chance to fight off Alzheimer's disease. Neil Slade, author of Tickle Your Amygdala, is an expert on the brain. Now, Neil, this is something we always knew, but it's kind of nice to see this in a study, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a recent study. This comes out of Rush University in Chicago, and they put together a diet, and they wanted to see how it would affect Alzheimer's. And they call it the MIND diet, and it stands for something, but I won't go into that. But the MIND diet apparently will allow people to lower the risk of Alzheimer's by 54%.
Wow.
That's really big. And even if you only follow it partially, part of the time, they still see a pretty significant, like 35% reduction in Alzheimer's. And that's really affects, like 5 million people in the U.S. every year.
That's exciting. You know, I do the supplements, Neil, but I also like to use the natural, like the walnuts and the blueberries. And, gosh, I hope it works.
Well, that's what they really emphasized, was that the biggest benefit came from eating whole foods. And I think it's because the whole foods contain lots of very complex things that when you take them out and just put them in a supplement, you're only getting, part of it. And you were right when you were talking about berries. Berries are considered, blueberries, for example, especially, are considered very strong in playing a role in this diet. Green leafy vegetables, nuts 5 times a week, beans, whole grains, olive oil as your main cooking oil. And you avoid things, people probably instinctively know this, you limit red meat, butter and margarine, cheese, and especially fried foods. So, you know, it's something that people should really go online and look at the details of this. And it's something anybody can do, and it's very easy, and it tastes good, too.
It sure does. Neil, thanks. Neil's website, by the way, linked up at our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. It's Neil, N-E-I-L, neilslade.com. It's got great information there. Listen to this Volkswagen story. Shares of Volkswagen plunged more than 18% after U.S. regulators found that some of its cars could manipulate official emissions testing. How could they do that? The EPA found that software in several diesel cars could deceive the regulators. Volkswagen was ordered to recall 500,000 cars in the U.S. on Friday. Apple will take mobility to the next level in 2019 when it launches its own long-rumored electric car. Sources familiar with the plan say that the tech giant has committed to the product and will soon triple the staff of its Project Titan, which has been investigating it for years. That's exciting. We're going to have electric cars all over the place. U.S. home resales falling more than expected in August, a cautionary sign for the U.S. housing market. The National Association of Realtors said that existing home sales dropped by almost 5% to an annual rate of 5.31 million units. That's not good for the economy. Well, if you spilled something all over your computer or signed a lease and then you got stuck with a bed bug filled apartment, relax. It's probably not your fault. It's probably Mercury retrograde. The astrological phenomenon, which lasts until October 9th, is one of the hottest scapegoats in town. What's it all mean, though? Let's check in with psychic Joseph Jacobs. Joseph, you've mentioned on the show Mercury retrograde quite a bit. What does that all mean?
Well, you know, I'm not an astrologer. It's right. The only thing I'm superstitious about. And it's the only thing that I warn clients, and I put it on my website before it happened. And I've found that starting a project when Mercury is retrograde ends up in having a lot of problems, misunderstandings. Also, it's not a good time to initiate a new project, business, sign papers. Very, you know, and make sure that your cars are working. Very often mechanical problems happen. I have a theory that a lot of it has to do with consciousness also. In other words, if you're unhappy with your situation, with your job, with things going around mm-hmm. you, and your mind is in a negative state, that can affect mechanical devices. You know, I've seen that happen. And so I don't initiate anything new. I'll see new clients, and they'll probably have to see me.
Right after October 9th, we're okay again, though, right?
I think, yeah, but it may drag on for a little while after October 9th, but you're a little bit safer after October 9th to initiate a new action, a new friendship, a new business, and that sort of thing.
And when they say retrograde, they're talking about the appearance of Mercury spinning backward, aren't they?
Yeah, it's from our position on Earth, it looks like it's going backwards.
I love it.
Of course, it isn't, but it does seem to work. And it's the only thing, that and moon phases are the only thing I ever take a look at astrologically.
Joseph's website, 800, that's just the number, 800cself.com. Thank you, Joseph. Well, as you know, one of our huge campaigns here on Coast to Coast AM is to protect our power grid, to get it insulated from an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse attack, some rogue nation, you know, detonating a nuke high above the United States in the atmosphere, or an X flare from the sun. We got to get this done. We got to get this fixed. And one of those responsible for bringing that information to all of us is William Forstgen, when he wrote, of course, One Second After. What would happen 1 second after an EMP attack or a huge X flare from the sun? Well, now he has written 1 year after, and he's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, William Forstgen with us for the next couple hours. And as I was saying, he was one of those who brought this to our attention, the fact that our power grid needs to be protected and insulated from either an EMP, and he'll explain that for you again, or an X flare from the sun. His first book, 1 second After, was cited on the floor of Congress before the House Armed Services Committee. His new one is called 1 year After. It talks about what happens after that attack, that EMP attack or the X flare. William Forstgen, welcome back, Bill. Good to have you.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, sir.
And it was nice seeing you in St. Louis when we taped the pilot program that you were the main guest for, a program we can't say too much about yet, but it was a great little TV show with my co-host Peter Vaccaro from St. Louis.
And well, I'm looking forward to seeing that hit the airways.
Great job.
Got a great package there.
We'll see what happens there. See what happens. By the way, the audience loved you. You brought great information. So 1 year after, it's a novel this time. And this book really highlights what happens after a year or two after that tragedy of an EMP attack or an X-flare from the sun. But let's go back just a little bit and tell everybody what an EMP is.
EMP, shorthand for electromagnetic pulse. As a military weapon, it is generated by lofting a small nuclear device, like the type that North Korea already has and Iran is striving for. It is detonated above the Earth's atmosphere. It has to be above the Earth's atmosphere, and it triggers what's known as the Compton effect. Folks can look it up, Compton effect. It starts splitting electrons off from atoms in the upper atmosphere, sets up a static discharge that when it strikes the Earth's surface in that first second, if detonated, two or three of them over the United States will blow out the entire power grid of the United States. We lose our entire infrastructure in 1 second.
And would they know exactly how many nukes to use and where to detonate them in terms of geographically around the country?
That's been calculated long ago. If our enemies have but one, they would most likely go for over the central United States. You'd have a strong impact, Chicago, St. Louis. The perfect storm for them would be three. Pop one over Ohio, another one over the central United States, Kansas, and the third one out near the West Coast. You would blanket the entire United States, and everything goes down. And according to a study you and I have talked about before, 5 years later, 80% of our generating capacity would still be offline from not just the overload that hits the generators. The real vulnerability is the hundreds of thousands of miles of high-tension lines that would just blow. Literally explode off the towers.
Well, we remember the Carrington event in the 1800s when a huge X-flare hit this planet from the sun. It cooked what we had for electricity at the time, and that was the telegraph system.
You know, I'm always glad that you mentioned that because we're not just talking about a military scenario that could take us down. We're talking about a natural phenomena. The Carrington event, yet again, something your listeners can look up, happened in 1859. And it was a solar flare observed by an astronomer named Carrington. And it was about 12, 18 hours later, a CME, as they're known, coronal mass ejections, travel slower than the speed of light. It blew out the internet of its day, the emerging industry of telegraphy, and that heavy, overbuilt system compared to our very sensitive system of today. Telegraph wires exploded. And to give you an idea how much energy was hitting us, railroad ties were bursting into flames of the power overload striking the iron rails, and the ties were bursting into flames.
How many people at that time, Bill, how many people knew what was happening? Carrington did, of course, but I bet nobody else did.
It was a what-the-blank type of event for most people, and word finally did get out as to there was some sort of solar storm. There was another event about a magnitude lower back in the 1920s. Quebec, you know the date more than I do. Well, Quebec was taken out for a while. When was it? 91?
Right around there. That's right.
Yeah. And we had a very close call just in March. I was in Iceland when it happened. Best aurora borealis in years, but I was sweating it. I mean, we were getting pretty close to a X-level event from a solar storm that was going to start blowing power grids off.
1989 for Quebec.
Yeah.
Happened in March.
And I remember one time you and I were on air only about a week or two after a doubleheader. Two CMEs blew off the sun, and if the Earth's orbit had been 2 days back, we would have been hit.
That's right. And these were big ones.
Yes. And the first one was described by one solar observer is like the battering ram that would have blown down the gates, and then the second one just would have
that would have been
the grid of the world.
Well, with William Forstchen, his new work 1 year after, William, the prediction of mass die-offs because of an EMP attack or an X-flare, they're astronomical. See, a lot of people need to understand that the X-flare alone won't physically kill you instantly. You're not going to cook. You're not going to fry like that. The same with the EMP in the atmosphere. It's not going to do that. But what it does do, it kills the services that we all need, water, ability to get gasoline, food. That's how we die.
Well, recall when you and I were together just a couple months ago, and that came up in taping the pilot, and it's, we were in St. Louis, and the question I presented right away is, where does St. Louis get its water? Well, we all know. Comes out of Mississippi, but it goes through filtration systems. Nobody wants to drink raw Mississippi
That's
water.
That's right. And those filtration systems are all run by electricity.
Right. And then within 3 to 5 days of those systems being offline, whatever water you have and bottled water is gone. It's the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We'll still have air, but the next thing down is water. 3 to 5 days without clean water supply. Vast majority of the population will be sick. If toilets even run gravity-fed back into Mississippi, what happens to the water supply down in Memphis?
And, you know, if I were somebody diabolical running one of these rogue countries, I would do this in the dead of winter when half of the country is frozen, because then pipes burst, you know, you can't heat your homes. I mean, it's a disaster.
You know, folks, I mean, I look around my house. Now, I do have backups, and I know you, an advertiser you just ran was about solar generators that you can get. I have one. But, okay, you take a heat pump or even an oil-fired system. It still needs an electrical kick on the thermostat to get the thing going. So you could have 1,000 gallons of propane or oil in the tank. You'll still freeze to death if you don't have electricity.
It's going to get you eventually. And it's so easy. I'm friends with Meghan McCain, and Meghan, of course, has her own talk show through our network. And, of course, your father is John McCain. And you're going to love this, Bill. Are you sitting down?
Yes.
Okay, because she is working on Daddy to get him to talk with us, you and me, Michael Maloof, and to get legislation passed. We have to convince him. But to get legislation passed to get the grid insulated. She is into this. I gave her a copy of your book, and she says, this is amazing. So she's going to talk to John, her father, John McCain, and then we're going to talk to him and see if we can get him convinced to do this.
Thank God, because we need at least one senator or one powerful leader in the House to finally stand up and say, let's do this. Because you remember the frustration several years ago where the House, bipartisan, passed a bill at the federal level to start hardening the infrastructure, and one senator blocked it in committee.
Killed it right there.
One senator, who of course will be one of those taken care of while the rest of us are starving.
See, people don't really understand the magnitude of the power grid in this country. You know, we are moving to an e-commerce society. You know, people are ordering things online. They listen to this show through all our great 600-plus terrestrial radio stations, but they're also listening on their phones and everything else. All that goes away instantly. I don't understand, and I want to ask you this. If we have time, you can answer it. If not, we'll talk about it after the break. But why don't all the e-commerce companies, Amazon, Google, Yahoo, and the electrical companies all get together and fix the grid for $2 billion without having to worry about taxpayer money? Why don't they do that? It's nothing.
Let somebody else worry about it. And having had interaction with hearings in Raleigh with some of the electrical companies around here, it's like, well, we're going to have to invest in infrastructure, so who's going to give us the money to do it?
Unbelievable. You know, it's like a sports team that wants the city to build the stadium when they're very capable of doing it themselves. Stay with us. William Forstgen with us, author, of course, of One Second After, and his new book, which we will talk about when we come back, 1 year after. He's going to tell us what life is like after the EMP or the solar flare takes us down. And we'll take your calls next hour with William Forstgen as we talk about protecting our power grid from an EMP attack or a solar flare from the sun. He's the author of the book One Second After, and his new one, which came out, what, about 6 years after that, 1 year after. Here we are.
Yeah, a book came out September 15th, and, you know, again, something you and I talked about. I remember you asking me several years back, is there going to be a sequel?
Yep.
And I said no. The book was tough to write. It was very emotional, and looking at a dark scenario in which 90% of all Americans would die, not the type of thing you really enjoy writing, but finally got around to doing the second one, and it came out last week.
1 year later, tell us about the title and what that means.
1 second after, in that first chapter, it starts the story once. We actually start a couple hours beforehand, but what happens in the first seconds after an EMP strike? And I recall a member in the White House several years back saying, oh, if there was an EMP, there'd only be several thousand casualties, and we'd get over it quick enough. Well, about 3,000 aircraft are now so computer-controlled, they would all fall from the sky like bricks in the first seconds. Now, you would have an event in the first seconds 100 times worse than 9/11 in terms of casualties. And then, as we've already talked about, the breakdown of social order, loss of water, command and control, and the novel 1 second after, I follow the storyline for 1 year. Therefore, the title 1 year after then picks up the story a year after that as the small town of Black Mountain, North Carolina, which is a real town, it's where the story is set, starts to try and rebuild. Now, I kind of define it as if 1 second after made us aware of how we had to start preparing individually, 1 year after, sort of like a graduate program of how do we start rebuilding our society after such the greatest military catastrophe in history.
And can we rebuild? I mean, we talked about millions of people dying, millions of people dying. What about those people who don't die? What's left?
Precious little. What got me on the subject back in 2004 was Congressman Roscoe Bartlett's report that most of your listeners I know are familiar with, the Congressional Report on EMP, in which the projections in that report were a 90% fatality rate, led me into writing a book.
Over a year period.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I remember one of the gentlemen who testified at that report, a real expert on the subject, said it would be likely to be thrown back 100 years. And when I met him, I said I had to disagree as a historian. We'd be thrown back 1,000 years because people in 1870, 1880 knew how to live within the technology of that time. We don't. How many people out there know how to make a steam engine work or any number of the technologies of that time?
I know.
We'd be back in the dark ages.
Yeah, we sure would. I mean, everybody has their own expertise at something, but I got to tell you, you know, when I was in college and leading up to college, I worked part-time for a company called Masco in Taylor, Michigan, and we made single-handed faucets.
Single-handed
faucets. You know the faucets now that are just, you just have one handle on it?
Oh, no, that we see advertised now. They're electronic. You wave your hand over it.
Well, they've gotten electronic, but this was, you do it manually. I used to make those. I mean, I worked on the assembly line. I guess I could make a faucet if I had to, but I couldn't connect it to water and get it working because I don't have that expertise.
20 years prior to the Civil War, what was viewed as something for entertainment, ether and also nitrous oxide, had been around since around 1800, but it was for what were even then, I guess you would call them stoner parties. It was a dentist in Georgia one day who said, you know, I could pull a person's tooth while they're unconscious. So ether and nitrous oxide were around in 1840, and thank God, because of the Civil War, where hundreds of thousands of men had to go through surgery. Does anybody know how to make ether today?
Probably not.
And
how, and how do you apply it? I mean, how do you know how much to give someone?
Right. And a reader came up to me, asked me that question, and pointed out, you know, your typical, even small college chemistry lab, you could make ether again. You could make nitrous oxide. And that's some of the things I start putting into 1 year after.
Well, this is what concerns me, though, William. I mean, 1 year after concentrates primarily on an EMP attack, and we're going to get into that in a big way here in a moment. But, you know, as we've been talking about, there's also that possibility that an X flare from the sun will occur. So regardless of how one weighs the possibilities, there's no doubt in my mind that eventually one or the other is going to happen 100%. It may be 80% X flare, 20% EMP launch. I don't know, but it's going to happen. So with an odds of 100%, and even if you would say to me, George, it's really 80%, I mean, that's huge. Why isn't anyone doing anything about this? I don't get it.
Neither do I, to be frank. I wish I could give an answer right now other than to say you reach millions of listeners, and if but 10% of your audience got on the phone tomorrow morning or on the internet and told their members of Congress, you want my vote next year, you address the issue of infrastructure security, or else I will go to a candidate that does. If but 10% of your listeners did that, they could change the game entirely.
I would love to see one of our presidential candidates, Democrat or Republican or Libertarian, starting to really talk about this. Of course, as you know, because he wrote the foreword to your book earlier, your first one, Newt Gingrich, he talked about it. I haven't heard a candidate talk about this since.
I know of one. A good example of the frustration. Remember the storm that hit Washington, D.C. several years back and took the whole grid out for a week?
Yeah.
Newt called me up, and we both said, we got to get an op-ed out ASAP. And we did within a couple of days, saying, what we see in Washington at this moment is a foreshadowing, a foretaste of a reality that's 100% that will hit the entire nation. It was met with scorn and mockery. It gets very frustrating at times, as you know as well. I'm delighted what you said earlier. We might have at least one senator finally stepping on board. We need 99 other senators to step on board.
It's just so obvious, William, that this needs to be done, and it's not happening. Now, aren't some states individually protecting their own grids?
Yes. The state of Maine led the way, and, okay, I'm proud to say it. The representative, Boland from Maine, the state legislator, read one second after, started reading some other things. Maine has at least started to push through the process. North Carolina, where I live, is starting to look at it. I'm leaning more and more towards belief that we're going to work from the bottom up as much as from the top down. So if, but again, 10% of your listeners hit their local state reps and said, you know, we can act locally on this at the state level. Remember, that's how the founders originally envisioned things, that a lot of stuff was going to start at a state level rather than a federal level. We need to do that again.
Now, I gave the probability of 100%, I don't know when, it's open-ended, of an X flare or an EMP attack taking out the grid. Maybe not 100%, but it's going to take out the grid. I give it 100%. What about you?
100%.
Same thing. That's scary.
Yes.
Especially, yes, as I was saying before the break, I mean, we are all tied to the power grid now. Everything we do is tied to the power grid. Everything.
And it becomes more and more vulnerable every day.
Facebook, for example, they're out of business if the power grid goes down. It's all over for them, too. So why aren't these companies taking, if you got every huge company that deals with the power grid and also using the internet to make big bucks, and you took a little piece from each one and they contributed to this to get this insulated, this would be done in a matter of a couple years.
One of the things I keep talking about is when I was a kid, you know, we all went outside. We saw the little spider webs on the lawn in the morning, covered in dew. And if you were a little boy with matches at times, you'd set one on fire, just to burn the web out. But imagine that spider only had 6 or 8 threads that are at least fireproof against sadistic little boys. How much easier to rebuild the web?
That's right.
The same thing applies to our infrastructure. You don't even have to get the whole system ready. For heaven's sake, get 10% of the system, key trunk lines, ready to go, and then you can start rebuilding off of those.
I don't want to give away the ending to 1 year after, but is there a hero in the book?
The hero is every man. I gave a talk this weekend at a prepper conference. There was about 1,000 people attending. 300 or 400 showed up for my talk. And I'm looking at them. I said, you know, you are the guys who, like our revolutionary fathers, will be the ones that will have to save this country. If the country doesn't want to listen to the message, it's going to be individual folks. It's going to be people like you, me, your listeners. We're going to say, I'm going to take care of myself, then my family, then my neighbors, then my community, up to the state level. Maybe someday the feds will wake up.
Maybe they will. It is just, you know, this is what I think it is. It's a matter of us truly educating and telling these people to get this done. Because somewhere, some way, somebody's going to be smart enough, like a John McCain, to say, we got to get this fixed. These people are right. They're 100% right. Let's get it done.
If we just look at the news of a couple weeks ago, where in the same week, North Korea announced it's running up its nuke weapon program again. It's lofting satellites. Now, a satellite, you and I are old enough to remember Sputnik. It wasn't the fact that the Russians could put a little tennis ball-sized, basketball-sized object in space. It was they could put a nuclear weapon on top of that same rocket and take us out in 20 minutes. North Korea has developed the ability to nuke us. And we're paying Iran to allegedly stop building its nuclear program? Did you remember, I think you and I talked about the article that said EMPing an enemy is Sharia compliant?
Yeah.
That's
crazy
that we're not responding to it.
It is absolutely lunacy at its best. It really is. So as you look at this, where do you think it's headed? I mean, what's the end game here?
We've already won over it a couple of moments ago in the terms of it is a 100% certain that statistically within our lifetimes or definitely our children's lifetimes, there will be a major CME event that will blow the grid down, not just of the United States, but most of the world. There are not enough spare parts available. The world could go into global just meltdown, literally meltdown, because nuclear power plants, their spent fuel rods without coolant will go under. Our whole financial global system will go under. It's going to happen. A military event, I'm pessimistic about that. Because Iran and North Korea have what military folks call first strike capability. We call 20 years ago, oh, North Korea isn't going to build a bomb. And then when they finally did, it was, oh, don't worry. It's only going to be a couple small ones. What can they do with it? Hey, it's an EMP first strike weapon. We could recover from Pearl Harbor. We could recover from 9/11. We're not going to recover from an EMP. Yes. Someday America might come back, but 90% of us will be gone.
Well, and here's the other question. Let's assume a nation does this
and
renders our power grid useless. What happens to the other countries that have hated our guts who then realize that we've let our guard down?
You know, as you're asking me that question, I have a mental image of some of the wild animal shows, you know, they always used to sanitize them when we were kids, of a pack of hyenas bringing down a gazelle or something. And then what do all the rest of the hyenas do? They pile on.
Yes.
Our enemies would pile on us. Some people ask, well, gee, wouldn't we take care of Iran or North Korea? Iran wants to bring around the fulfillment of the end times according to some of their religious beliefs. Look at ISIS. ISIS actually wants to trigger a catastrophic global war. North Korea is run by a nut job that makes Hitler look like a saint.
Now, I am told that if our submarines, for some reason, do not hear from someone at high level of the military that's in constant communication with them, that they basically launch. I'm wondering if that would happen.
I've asked that question, and I'm glad you raised that, because I always try to say this when I'm on with you. I work strictly in declassified. I don't touch anything that's classified. I have no access to it. I ask questions. There's times people will look at me and they'll just smile and say, Bill, it's a beautiful day out, and they don't answer the question. That's one I've asked. I don't know the answer. But, yes, at any given time, we have at least, since classified information, I would guess half a dozen boomers out there, each one carrying approximately 20 to 24 rockets with multiple warheads. Sure, they could retaliate, but as I have a character say in the novel One Second After, when at the end he asks, the end of the book, who did this and why, and the response is, oh, we really kicked them.
Yeah.
He's thinking about his dead daughter, his dead neighbors, his dead friends, and his sad response is, what difference does it make now?
What would this country look like? Paint us that picture, William, if the grid goes down a year later.
You're broadcasting out of L.A.
Mm-hmm.
The water to L.A. comes from what? Several hundred miles away?
Yeah. The Colorado River.
I was listening to your advertisement about an event taking place in Las Vegas. Las Vegas is far and away the most vulnerable city in the entire United States. Without electricity, that place becomes uninhabitable within an hour.
Oh, it's gone. Nobody goes there. No electricity, no lights, no Vegas.
No AC.
No nothing.
It's the middle of the desert.
But it's that way all around the country. Right. Wherever the grid goes down, everybody gets affected. You can't go to work. They can't be open. So what about your money? You can't get your money. The ATMs don't work. The banks don't work. There's a rush on food. Within 3 days, every shelf has been taken down. And then we saw what happened last year in Ferguson, Missouri, and in Baltimore, Maryland. During the riots and the demonstrations and the civil unrest, people go crazy. They just start looting, robbing, taking. If your life is threatened, it's 10 times worse.
And complete. And as we were watching the tragedy of what was happening in Ferguson, Baltimore, and elsewhere, the sophisticated command and control systems they had available to complete the helicopters circling, radio, and everything else, well, the police cars will not even move. The majority of modern vehicles will fry off in a major event. No radio. You got cops back on their feet without any communication whatsoever. Command and control. Sanity breaks down.
Yeah, the
5% of the animals in our country will think it's a field day, at least at the start.
The cars that would work will be the pre-computerized cars.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to own a Prius after this. But anything prior to about 1965, you're pretty safe.
But then you can't pump gasoline.
Right. Right.
Once that tank of gasoline goes, that's it.
Yeah, you hit something right there, because you were mentioning your first job. My first job was I was a gas pump jockey in New Jersey. And if we lost power, you just pulled the front panel off the pump and you put a crank handle on it, you could still crank the gasoline out.
Until you run out, but then you're not going to get refilled.
No, they're
not going to come back. William, we're going to take phone calls. Let's open up the phone lines. All of you, call in. This is probably one of the most important stories you'll ever hear. We got to get the power grid fixed. William Forstgen with us with his new work called One Year After.